This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Tunnel Vision, a show brought to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined by Ryan Abraham and special guest today, the Chief of Staff for USC's Athletic Department, Brandon Sosna. Brandon, I know you are a very busy man. Thank you so much for coming in the studio tonight.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. Big shoes to fill in the first post-shotgun era, so wow. I hope I live up to the legacy.
I heard you also have a food analogy, maybe? Possibly? Ooh.
Well, I know how much this show likes food analogies, so I think if you show up in somebody else's home, you got to come prepared.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't know if they like them. I just force them upon the audience.
Yeah, force-feed the food analogy.
They do ask for it, so I don't know if it's just sort of like a painful thing. They just want to keep, you know, it's like that they're little scab they keep picking at or whatever, but they seem to like the food analogy, so we're looking forward to a good one.
Hopefully okay. I can upstage you and have a better one than you've had.
Oh, look at that. He's
this is your victory lap, so this is, you know.
Well, we have a lot to talk about, obviously. We got to ask Brandon some burning questions, and wherever you're watching, Facebook, YouTube, or Periscope, put your comments, questions, concerns, and we'll be looking out for your comments. We love hearing from you guys. Of course, just understand that Brandon can't answer everything that you're wanting to know. He is obviously in a high position, so there's not some things that he can talk about, but obviously we want to pick his brain a little bit. And if you're watching on Periscope, you tweet hashtag TunnelVision. I'll put your tweet up on the screen. No calls tonight, obviously. Hope y'all understand in that sense. But guys, like I said, a lot to talk about tonight. Brandon, I think you are a very popular man as of late.
Yes.
And you just tweeted out, and I thought this was interesting. You got a lot of love on Twitter. 2-year anniversary with USC Athletics. Pretty crazy considering all that you've had to endure in the past 2 years, the world, the global pandemic. First off, just thoughts on approaching that milestone.
Yeah, obviously, having had some time to reflect on it just today, thinking back to my arrival at USC for the Holiday Bowl in 2019 and everything that was going on at that time and some of the challenges that we inherited and the work that we were setting out to do. And it's hard enough just going somewhere new for any job, any new responsibility. You have to learn people's names. I'm talking like the basic fundamentals, where to go in the morning, what you're supposed to do, how you get into your email account. And at that time, there were some things going on, but obviously, you know, our attention right away was on some things that we were trying to do with the football program and the investments that we had targeted to make there. But also within the department, getting to know the staff, having discussion sessions with virtually every unit within athletics, trying to understand what some of our challenges were, what our strengths were, what our opportunities were. And I don't think we really processed at the time that it was going to become the most volatile time in the history of college athletics. But some of those things that have happened over the last 2 years, from the Alston case in Supreme Court to the introduction of the one-time transfer exception to name, image, and likeness, conference realignment, there were all of these things that were about to happen that have really altered the landscape of college athletics. And just layer in there for fun, a once in a generation or whatever global pandemic on top of that. So certainly never anticipated some of the challenges that we would face. But I think in a lot of ways, it helped us come together as an athletics program. And it helped really rally our staff and unite around this message that we have of being student athlete centered in everything that we do.
Yeah, pretty cool. We appreciate you coming on. I know, like Keely said, busy guy. It was funny that it got to be the 2-year anniversary. I don't think that was planned or anything, right? It just it sort of just happened that it would be the 2-year anniversary.
It was the only day you were available. You're a hard man to schedule.
So. I'm actually leaving tomorrow to go Christmas break. We've tried to do this before, but we do appreciate that. Like Keely pulled up the video we did, Lunch with a Trojan, during the pandemic. May of 2020 is, I guess, when we did that. So that's kind of interesting. It's been a while. We had I had facial hair back at the time.
It was a good look. I think you should bring it back.
All right, maybe we'll do that sometime. But I like to shave when I can. But for you, like that 2 years, I think it's gone by fairly quick, but there's also been so much stuff going on. I mean, that I don't know if you anticipated any of the kind of stuff that was happening. I knew you knew there was going to be some big changes in the football program, but it seemed like there were so many different things thrown at you that you're like, you have your sights set on the goal line, but you're like dodging all these tacklers that are coming off the sideline that you didn't even anticipate would be part of the play.
Yeah, Mike likes to use the analogy of a gladiator when he goes into the Coliseum and he's got tigers coming at him and people coming out of all over the place. And it sort of felt like that for a while. But I think anytime you, as a professional and a competitor, you want to be at a place like USC. And for me, a lot of that was about going to a school where you can truly compete for national championships. But I think you know it's incumbent upon any opportunity like this that you're going to have some challenges, and there's going to be things that you're going to confront that are at a really high level that you have to be equipped and capable to manage.
Mm-hmm. The competitor aspect, I like when you just said that, and I feel like we're not going to talk about previous, athletic department heads and stuff like that, but I do get a sense much more than I've seen before that there is a competitive nature, and if fans are going to say these guys don't know what they're doing or whatever, it's not like you're going to, hey, I'm going to show you guys what's up. But there's more of a, like, we're not doing this just to like get by, just to, because we're USC. It's like I feel like there's, you do want to be competitive. And you're like, hey, we can be the best out there, and kind of like, I don't know, maybe like a chip on your shoulder. There's like an athlete would that didn't get, like a Tom Brady that got selected in the sixth round or whatever it was.
Yeah, I think what I would say to that is, one of the reasons that for me personally, I chose to be at this level as opposed to the pros is that I like that the work that we do makes an impact on young people's lives. At the same time, we want to win. That's why we're in sports, because we want to win. And the student athletes that we serve every single day, winning is really important to them too.
Yeah.
And so, I think the most dangerous thing that can happen when you're leading a sports organization is for at any point in time, the people who are fans of your team feel like they care more than you do. Because whenever you reach the point where it feels like I care more than the people who are responsible for the organization that I love, I think that's when the next level to apathy, whatever it is, whatever is worse than apathy, I think that's when that takes over. So I think we do care. I mean, we are passionate about the work that we do, and we want to win, and we want to win in everything that we do. But it's also important for us that people know that, so that they understand that the same level of commitment they make to the program and the sacrifices they make to support, and I mean investment of dollars and time and all the things that go into being a fan, that they know that is reciprocated by the people that are responsible for leading their organization.
In that sense, Brandon, since you just stated how much you care, and I think USC fans get that at this point, but when you first came in, there was a lot of vitriol kind of just pointed in your direction, as well as Mike Bone. What was that like for you as a human to just deal with fans who were frustrated and kind of taking it out on you at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before, but you have to accept and embrace passion in all its forms. And sometimes it can come in a little bit of a vitriolic way. And, there was definitely some disappointment to that. You try not to pay attention to it, but you're right. You are a human being, and it's impossible not to see and hear some of the things that are being said. And quite honestly, my biggest disappointment with it is that when I got to USC, I heard a lot about what the Trojan family represented. And to me, there were some things that were said, the vitriol, some of the personal attacks that to me didn't feel very becoming of what I thought the Trojan family was supposed to be about. And so I hope, maybe there's some part of this that can be a learning lesson for all of us about how to go about those things. But it's not about us. That when you come to a place like this, you sign up for the level of scrutiny that we've been under. And at the end of the day, it's our job to deliver.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, at the end of the day, obviously, we hate to see it. I mean, there's personal attacks on coaches, on players, on administrators, on us. It, when you put yourself out there, you're open to those kind of things. But there's some of there's part of it, like, you understand that it's been run so poorly for so long that the next person to take over, the assumption is going to be it's going to continue to be run poorly. And so they sort of will pigeonhole you into, like, they're going to run it the same way it was run before.
Yeah, and I would just say to that that, you know, not speaking at all to the way things were before, I really don't know. But I assure you that nobody has higher expectations for us than we do for ourselves. And so we show up with that same degree of relentlessness every single day and in everything that we do across, you know, football. I think sometimes people look at athletic directors or people that are in my role and think that we're just general managers of football programs. When in reality, we have 21 sports and 600 athletes, and college athletics departments are extremely complex organizations that are very unique. And so there's a lot more to it than that. But that standard of excellence that we have at USC is something that we take seriously and work very hard to uphold. I mean, I talk about this when I'm recruiting people to USC. I'm just talking about staff members or coaches, but you're going to win a national championship in something every single year when you're at USC. It's just a question of which sports and how many.
Yeah.
And that's not something you can say everywhere else. I, in my office in Heritage Hall, I look out over our track facility, and I think maybe probably take for granted the fact that every single day there's an Olympic gold medalist out there training and practicing, either those who have already won gold medals or some that will win them in the future. And that is just an element of USC that's really unique, really special, and something that I know, you know, our people take a lot of pride in. But it is something that you have to work with great urgency and purpose to uphold.
Mm-hmm. In that sense, is there something about USC that you didn't anticipate before you took the job that now you see and maybe cherish?
Yeah, I don't know that there was anything I didn't anticipate that I now cherish. I mean, I really love the people. I really do. We have some wonderful, wonderful people. I mean, within our athletics program, within our sports, across the university, within our fan base. For all of the negativity that we talked about earlier that exists in, you know, some parts of the internet or the peristyle, there have been some people that have just gone above and beyond to make us feel like we're a part of this community and a part of this family. And so the brighter sides of what the Trojan family represents, when you experience that, the true intensity of that and what it represents, that part of it can be really moving, especially when you're not really from here or have a connection here until one day, you know, the guy that you work for gets the AD job and now your life changes.
You mentioned the peristyle. I think we probably talked about this on Lunch with the Trojan. I mean, I don't remember what I had for breakfast, but I'm sure we did back then. I don't remember I had a beard. But so the peristyle is USCfootball.com message board. You know, you're someone that frequently reads that. I mean, that's probably somewhat rare, but maybe tell people why, from your, you know, upbringing in Cincinnati, that you were kind of brought up on message boards and being involved as a fan like that.
Yeah, I'm a fan of sports teams too. Yeah. I was watching the Browns Raiders game on the edge of my seat, pacing as the Raiders were attempting a game-winning field goal earlier, because I knew if the Browns lost, the Bengals were alone in first place in the AFC North. So I know what it's like to be a fan. I cherish the fact that I still have some sports teams that it doesn't really conflict with my work, that I can truly be just a fan of and have an emotional outlet in that regard. But yeah, I mean, I grew up that way. I frequently, Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com is a great friend of mine, and have known him since I was in 7th or 8th grade when I started working at the University of Cincinnati basketball camps for a great mentor of mine and now a friend of Crosstown, Mick Cronin. But, you know, I think fundamentally the reason why I like to read the peristyle is that I think so often in roles like mine, you get so disconnected from your fan base. And when was the last time we showed up to a game and bought tickets on the website and went and tailgated and parked and walked through a normal entrance and scanned a ticket and found our seat and went to a concession stand? We don't do those things in our job, right? So that you have to have some way to understand what the experience is that your fans are having on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, that element of connectivity. But again, it comes back to some of those things that we talked about earlier, which is they have to know that we care. They have to know that we listen. And college athletics are unique, as we talked about, and it's not like the pro model. You know, we rely on donations and ticket sales to fund all of our athletics operations. And so I consider those people that support and contribute part of our team, and they have a voice. And, you know, we're entrusted with the responsibility of leading the program, but you can never lose that voice from your fans. And those that get disconnected from that, I think in the long term, they alienate, but they're also missing the critical feedback that can help inform some of the things that you do. There are things that I see every day on social media or the Peristyle or anywhere else that I'm like, hey, that's a great idea. And I talk to my team a lot about being idea agnostic, which means I don't really care where a great idea comes from or who gets credit for a great idea. We just want the best ideas. And if that comes from somebody who yells at me all day long on a message board, but occasionally they have a great idea, all power to it. I think it's great.
It's funny. So Brandon does care. And I think, you know, Mike Bone and Brandon, it's been eye-opening to see them interact with people. I mean, I had lunch with my longtime friend, Dan, who you might know him as Dano. He used to do our tailgate. He was the chef for our tailgating way back in the early 2000s when we had the RV and all that kind of stuff. And he was out in South Bay. I had lunch with him and his wife. And he was just, I mean, unsolicited, just was praising, like, you know, Brandon came over and talked to me and I was talking about things. And to a man, everyone I've talked to when we've had different events that you've shown up for, like the tailgates or whatever, or if someone comes up to you at the basketball game, all I'm getting is like positive feedback from that. So props to that. But if you see Brandon, I don't want you to like just track him down or whatever. I'll give you his home address later. No, I'm saying, it's worth chatting. And when you first came on, so I guess it was like 2 years ago, we had beers or whatever in Hermosa, and I, you know, talked about like, hey, I think this is going to be good. And it's funny that initially people were just like, you know, I don't know about this. But then every time someone would meet you or interact with you, they're like, oh, I get it. I get what you're saying. So maybe it's a slow process, but it seems like you're winning the fans over.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that one thing about this that has been unique in my journey is I grew up in Cincinnati. And so when I worked for that program, I'd been going to games all my life. I had been a fan. I knew all the traditions. I knew all the history. I came here not knowing any of that. Yeah. And so those interactions for me are, one, they're enjoyable because it's just fun. But two, they're really informative, right? You learn a lot about the experience that people have as fans. You learn a lot about the history and the tradition. So if I can make an impact on people, that's a positive experience. I'm all for that. I think that that's great. But at the end of the day, those people are doing more for me than I'm doing for them. And now you talk about being at basketball games. And other, I've never been as popular as I was when I was with you at a basketball game. So
he got Brian Abraham.
No, he got me the courtside stuff. It was great.
I've never been more popular than that day.
that was great though. Like, Brandon hooked me up and we were down on the court and everything. And your boss did one time too. I mean, just for a while, like first time I met Mike Bone, I just went to shake his hand. He was like, come sit down with me. He's on the courtside. So yeah, they're very approachable, which is great, and they love basketball. They're big basketball fans, and there's probably a lot of opportunities to see, you know, come out to the basketball games and to get to see you guys.
Yeah, we talk a lot about making decisions that impact winning. Well, one of the biggest decisions that a fan can make to impact winning is showing up, and I think our basketball program and what Andy has built is deserving of that type of support. And so obviously we're dealing with a little bit of a challenge right now, but really counting on people as we get into conference play to show up and support our team. They're a great group of young men, and obviously they're performing at a level that makes us all proud. And so our student section has been our bedrock this year, and obviously nothing impacts the atmosphere in Galen quite like our student section, but really counting on the Trojan family and our fans to show up and support this team. Last year was special. I would say that my favorite moment at USC so far, quite honestly, has been that Kansas basketball game in Indianapolis in the NCAA tournament, not just because of the way that we won and what it represented or the historic venue that it was in, but it was just a really special experience to be a part of that. And so I invite you all down to support this team because they're worthy of that support. They've earned that from all of us.
Undefeated, top 10 team, pretty good.
12-0. Now, Brandon, you talked about the fan response. For the Lincoln Riley hire, was it what you expected? What were you expecting after making that hire? Did you even think about the fan response in that type of way?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we really thought about it in terms of as you're going through the process, and especially as it's getting down to the end on Sunday, and you know you're hopeful that you'll be able to make a hire. I think there were a few moments where it started to sink in a little bit the way that it was going to be responded to, and just some of the early phone calls that we made once word started to spread and some people that we wanted to call and reach out to directly so that they would hear that news from us. But that that part of it is awesome. Obviously, we haven't won any football games yet, but the way that it's affected people and this just contagious energy that's spreading. I walked into a basketball game after we hired, I honestly can't remember which one, but the energy in the building just felt different. It just felt like for the first time in 2 years, it was really sort of our program, and that was a rewarding feeling.
Yeah, what is the momentum like? Was it like a jolt to the system having a big hire like that?
Yeah, because it impacts everything and everyone. I think we all know intuitively the importance of football and supporting our overall athletics program. But we also know that externally, the reality of it is that the majority of the attention that we receive and the eyeballs that are on our program are football related. And so it elevates everything and everyone. And I think it, as a leader, when you can do something that's going to have an impact, not just on that thing, but on everything that you do, those are the best types of decisions that you can make.
Now, coming into the 2021 football season, what was the plan going in without knowing win-loss records?
The plan as far as?
Head coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, it was the same mission from the day we arrived and to where it is right now, is you want to give your football program everything that it needs to be successful and support your coach and your coaching staff and your student athletes to the maximum extent that you can. So I don't think that we ever really varied from that plan. Obviously, there were decisions that were made along the way as far as how we reacted to things that were going on. But fundamentally, from the moment we arrived, it was being really thoughtful and strategic about how we provide the football program the caliber of support that it needs to win championships. And I've said this before, but I think it's a really important distinction, as we talk a lot about championship expectations at USC, which are derived from our historical performance. But in the real world, like for anybody that's watching and the way that they do their jobs, the expectations they want set for them are based on the tools and the resources they have to be successful in their job. And so I don't think you can truly evaluate anyone until you give them all of those tools and all of those resources. And in fairness to whether it's a coach or somebody in our administration or in any world, if you didn't have a great studio like this, what kind of show would you be expected to produce, right? So I think in fairness to anyone, you want to provide every tool, every possible resource to be successful. And that was our objective from day one.
Mm-hmm. We actually got a question on YouTube from Trojan Man, who said, how hard was it to stick to the plan with a fan base screaming for a change?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And I think, you know, when you set your sights on the objective being winning, you are mindful of maybe what some of the sentiments are that are out there. But whether the Coliseum was full or empty didn't change what our priority was, which was to win football games.
Yeah.
And so I think you have to have the courage in some ways to be really disciplined to what your plan is and to following through on your process and not being reactionary in any way. I like to say that you kind of have to have a firewall around emotion in what you do. Yeah. Because everybody else can be emotional, and that's the great thing about sports. It's really unlike anything else. But in your decision making, you cannot let emotion influence you in any way, shape, or form, because that's how bad decisions happen. And you just got to trust your plan and your process and continue to execute.
Mm-hmm. Are there instances where, I mean, it's sports, right? Like, we're at the whim of bouncing balls like all the time, like things happen. I mean, you had talked about at the Lincoln Riley press conference, if Bedlam goes another way, like you might not be there talking about it. In the beginning of the year, USC loses to a Stanford team that didn't look very good in week one, but then beats Oregon later. If they go on some kind of run, you're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have fired Clay Held at that time. I mean, there are things that just happen. You're like, oh, wow. You know, Stanford ends up being bad. They're 3-8 or whatever, but and, you know, Bedlam end up going the other way for Oklahoma State. But there are times where the ball just bounces and you're like, you know, these are major events that could be affecting every decision that we make.
Yeah, and I think that's why we think about these things in terms of probability and trying to do things that are going to increase the probability over time of consistently getting to positive outcomes, because there are going to be variables. There are going to be unexpected twists and turns that happen. But I think fundamentally at the end of the day, you stay the course, you continue to make the decisions that you feel like are advancing your strategic objectives. And ideally, with a large enough sample size, those things balance out for you in a favorable way.
Yeah. It's almost like maybe a poker would be a good analogy, where you're just trying to make the right decisions and the cards can fall a certain way. Like if I'm drawing to an inside straight and I'm trying to hit that, you know, long shot, it's probably not going to be well, but I'm going to hit it sometimes like, oh, I won the pot. But over the long term, you're just doing it. Yeah, there might be something weird that happens and you make a bad decision and that gets a good result, but you're just trying to make the best decision possible. And sometimes, you know, circumstances beyond your control, a pandemic happens and it's just not going to work out your way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's why there's so much emphasis for us on the process.
Yeah.
Because outcomes can be variable and influenced by a multitude of different factors. But for us, it's really staying true and disciplined to the process.
Mm-hmm. Now, Friday was the conclusion of the early signing period, so we got to have Lincoln Riley's first like real press conference, he called it, because it was more beat reporters. And we got to talk to him about how crazy the last 3 weeks have been for him. But I'm just wondering, from your perspective, Brandon, how crazy has the last month been? Or maybe go even farther from that, since you were involved in this process for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to the day that we went to pick Lincoln up, and we flew out to Oklahoma City late at night for a quick turnaround. We were at the airport by 5:30, I think, the next morning. And Spencer Harris, our director of player personnel, joined us for that trip. And we had all these binders prepared and had a 2.5-hour personnel meeting on the flight. And from there, it was just it was a blur. That was a really invaluable time for us. We were able to get a lot accomplished. But from there to press conferences and onboarding staff and getting started with recruiting, it was just it was a lot. And so you're trying to build all those things and do all those things at the same time. It's like I said, I think, Ryan, you asked me the question after the press conference, was there any relief that it's over?
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, certainly there's relief that stage of the process is over and you got to the outcome that you wanted. But then you start thinking about, you know, onboarding an entire new staff and going through the same things that I went through 2 years ago, as far as how you know where to go and what to do and what our systems and processes are. And I think that signing day element creates a different sense of pressure and urgency about it as well, that that's a huge priority. And trying to get your current players engaged with the new coach and the new staff is a priority. It's just, there's a lot to do. And unfortunately, time is limited in a lot of respects. Mm-hmm.
Do you think with all the pressure, I mean, it was a really silly season, right? Like, you guys rocked the college football world with the big one. Ellis, and you guys were, we'll talk about like the secrecy part a little bit, but like, you guys were more like strategic about trying to, you know, get your guy, everything was going to be quiet. And all of a sudden, even, you know, former players, no one had any idea. We'll talk about that in a minute, but LSU was more like kind of bull in a china shop thing. They're like, we're going after Lincoln Riley. Now we're going to go get Brian Kelly, and just, we're going to go get the biggest name possible. It was a crazy season with big time jobs switching. We haven't seen blue blood to blue blood at all, like in the last 20, you know, not that very often, I guess, you know, and then twice in 2 days that happened. The way that's changed, and it seems like the early signing period is sort of a catalyst for part of it. There seems to be a lot of groundswell of pressure to move it to some other time, August, or get rid of it or whatever. What do you guys feel about the early signing period? Because it does impact, you know, the way these decisions are made. And I don't think it's a positive impact on the student athletes, which I know you guys are focused on making a better experience.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I know that there's a lot of discussion right now happening about it. And I certainly think there are compelling points to be made for keeping it where it is, moving it to earlier, moving it later. But I think that there's definitely some of those human being impacts that we talk a lot about that incentivizes you to maybe make decisions on somebody earlier than you otherwise would, or student athletes are committing to a university to play for a coach that by mid-December, and I'm not talking about a head coach maybe, but even a position coach, like,
yeah,
a lot of those things are changing. So I think it's something that I'm glad that is being reevaluated and reconsidered, and we'll see where it lands. But certainly think that we definitely felt the impact of that. And I think anybody that you talk to who was involved in any type of coaching decision this year and really in recent memory is talking a lot about what impact that's going to have on recruiting. Now, we were pretty steadfast in our belief that we weren't going to make any decisions for 1 year's worth of recruiting, especially in the transfer portal era. We certainly would never want to sacrifice our long-term interests for some of those short-term pressures that exist. Fortunately, we were able to kind of accomplish what we wanted to on both fronts by hiring a coach the day that we did and being able to impact recruiting by that early signing day. But it's definitely a conversation that's going to continue to be had as far as what the right way to do the early signing period is.
Now, I know you're not a mind reader, Brandon, but in his press conference on Friday, Riley was talking about how he's even more optimistic about the program now that he has boots on the ground. What do you think he's talking about in particular?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. First, I think it's understanding the current players that we have here and their level of buy-in and commitment to him and his vision and what we're going to accomplish. I think the response from people has genuinely moved Lincoln and Caitlin and their family and how appreciative the Trojan family is that Lincoln chose us and that they all have taken this leap of faith to be with us. And I think also, you know, that we've talked a lot about the support and commitments that we've made over the last few years. And so I will admit privately that one of the disappointing aspects of this for me is that we know, those of us that are there every day, that this is not the same football program it was a few years ago in terms of everything that we're doing to support it and the quality of people that we have in the building. But the reality is we were a 4-8 football team. Yeah. And that's about, you know, a 5-7 season in 2018. So the results haven't improved. So I think maybe from an outside perspective, you look at it and we haven't played in a bowl game in 3 of the last 4 years. And some of the things that are going on in recruiting that haven't been up to the level maybe that we necessarily aspire to. But I think maybe upon arriving here and getting to know the people and some of the investments that have been made and the support that we've really built around the football program, hopefully that's something that would be on that list as well.
Mm-hmm. The I mentioned like the secrecy stuff, like just things have been very quiet. When Clay Helton was let go, you guys tweeted it out. Pretty rare. Like usually it's like, oh, there's gets out there in social media. And I'd say on this show, and you'd be critical of me sometimes, which you totally can, like it's going to be a lot harder to hire someone and be quiet because you have to talk to a lot of people. And it sounded like, you know, it was a Mike Bone, Brandon Sosna thing, and he gave you credit for being the architect of the search. But from what you guys were talking at the press conference, it sounded like there was a lot of conversations being had with people that were kind of involved. How hard was it and how important was it to keep things secret? Because I think you had mentioned if it got out that you guys were talking to Lincoln Riley, it probably wouldn't have happened. But how important was that and how hard was it to accomplish that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a few things in response to that question. First, you talked about the change in leadership. And the most important thing for us in that was that our student athletes would hear from us first. And that's just a luxury that you never really seem to have anymore with the way that college football is covered. But to be able to get in that room and hear from us directly and hear from the coaching staff directly was really important. I also think broadly it's a reflection on Mike and his leadership that he's earned the trust and respect from Dr. Fold and Chairman Caruso and the many, many leaders that we have in the university leadership and the board of trustees, that he was empowered to lead this search and to bring forward a recommendation as far as who we should hire. And that confidence in us was really key to being able to maintain confidentiality, because we were able to really, without a lot of interference, run our process. Confidentiality was a huge part of it. Obviously, this is, again, something that came together at the very end. So it really didn't interest us to be talking in the community about who we were really interested in. So a lot of it, we were protected by just the natural unfolding of the process. But there was a lot of education for those who were involved that even like you saw maybe with some other schools, that even the presence of rumors that have to be addressed can have an impact, right?
Yeah.
Not a lot of coaches want to stand up there and have to answer questions about another job. And then when they say declaratively one way or another, they never really want to go back on that word. So you hope that you don't put your candidates in that position where they have to address a job. Now, I think just by virtue of the confidentiality in the process, I think a number of coaches ended up having to address questions about USC, which is unfortunate. It's never our intention that anybody right. would have to do that. It's not really fair to them, to their athletes, which is another part of the reason why we like to keep this confidential, because we've been on all sides of this. You know, sometimes you're on the other side where you're being recruited or you're being rumored, and you don't like to have to address those things either. So to me, it's just about a level of professionalism and respect that goes into it as well. But certainly there are the strategic benefits that are top of mind.
You mentioned Rick Caruso, Brandon, and I got to ask, in the introductory presser, you got a job offer by Caruso? One, were you expecting that? And two, what do you think you did to make such an impression on him?
Yeah, you know, I don't really know that it's about me or anything that I did. I think we're a great team and we're really well supported. For me personally, one of the great joys of this process was that I had an opportunity to get to know Chairman Caruso better and spend time with him and learn more about him and his family and the incredible leader that he is and the impact that he's made on this university and our community and the city of Los Angeles. So for me, you know, selfishly, not that it's about me at all, but having that time with Chairman Caruso, I feel very fortunate to have spent time with him and got to know him and consider him now a friend.
Mm-hmm. So the three of us,
Ryan.
The three of us in this room have some stuff in common as far as this thing, this USC football program.
We spend our lives on the parish.
Kind of determines a lot of, like, I mean, our livelihood, the way we do things. Maybe what your chair does has more to do with our livelihood than the team itself, but it's all part of it. You know, for the last 7 years or whatever, like, you know, Keely and I, if we feel like we're creating great content and putting a lot of stuff out there, you mentioned fan apathy is something you want to avoid. You know, if the team isn't doing well, if they don't feel like the administration is putting their all into it and they want to win as badly as they do, fans tune out, you know, and for you, you know, you're trying, you mentioned you got to get donations. You got that. It's the lifeblood of your athletic program. Winning four games doesn't help, but like making a hire like Lincoln Riley does. How much has the tone changed as far as from negativity to positivity? I mean, it's been huge for us. You know, we are getting record numbers on all of our shows. We're subscriptions, everything. There's more fans that are coming back and involved. And I don't know if you're seeing the same thing on your end with donations and ticket sales and all that. I assume it's the same, but we've seen it's been absolutely crazy for us. So, I mean, positive, it's a good way, and we're happy for the fans, but I assume it's the same way for you.
Yeah, the response has been enormous. If the sentiment, maybe if it's not been a 180-degree difference, maybe it's 179 degrees, but it's pretty much it changed overnight, which is great. It's great for the university. It's great for the community. It's great for everybody who's connected to our program that has a role in creating what Mike would call an intensity of interest around our program. And, you know, I have a deep appreciation for websites like yours and others that cover our program because you tell the stories of our athletes. You're there every single day covering what others might think of as minutia in the program, but for you, that is content that you have thousands of people that are refreshing their screens all day long to consume this content. And all of that is part of creating an intensity of interest that supports a program. And so, you know, for us, it's a great luxury to have so many outlets that cover this program. And obviously that can be difficult at times. And there's a level of scrutiny that comes with that you just have to embrace. But that intensity of interest is everything, and everybody's a part of that.
Yeah,
I think there was a lot of questions coming in about the Cal game, playing that game, and you know, it was a could have been a forfeited game. I know Lincoln Riley talked about how it was invaluable as far as that week of practice, understanding the roster that he had. What did it do for the team, in your perspective, and the coaching staff coming in?
Yeah, well, first I do just want to say that was a really difficult week. Obviously, announcing a new coach, and Lincoln had brought some individuals with him. And for me, I just really would take a minute to salute Dante for his leadership during that time. I think it's pretty well known that Dante and I have an extremely close personal friendship, and I think the world of him, and he's going to be a great head coach someday. And I think that experience in the interim capacity was great for him, and watching him grow from day one to the end of the season was really exciting for me to watch. But that entire week, I thought we showed the best of who we were, from Dante's leadership with the team, but Graham and Todd and Sean and Coach Jinx and Carrie and Daigie and Clay McGuire and Vic and Craig, everybody really contributed, and the level of professionalism was unlike anything I've ever seen. Coach Steiner and his staff, just in really, really difficult circumstances. And then the leadership within the locker room. It was a really tough week on players as well, and there were a number of our guys who really stepped up and demonstrated the leadership that I think represents what the Trojan family is all about. And you know, we have an incredible legacy that every player that walks through those doors, you know, you go into our team meeting room and on the wall, there's a list of every football player that's ever been drafted out of this university. And it's obviously a very, very impressive list. And when I see that, what I think about is every day I have a responsibility to uphold what they've built and to sacrifice as much as they sacrificed to get us to this point. And so I credit the players on our team that embrace that and recognize that, because it was a hard week. Things happen really quickly and you can't always communicate in the way that you want to. Certainly I look back on it and there are things that I wish we could have done differently, because these are really difficult things that affect the lives of a lot of people. It's coaches, it's their families, it's their friends, it's their children. And so I just give a lot of credit to Dante for his leadership and the rest of the staff. But it certainly wasn't lost on us in the process that playing that game against Cal would give a new staff, in the event we were able to hire a coach on that Saturday, Sunday, Monday, a week to be around the team to evaluate, but also to get on the road and get some recruiting done as well. So I remember the first time Lincoln called me, he was like, hey, I didn't even realize that we had a game on Saturday. Like, can I be at practice? Can I observe? I was like, yeah, that was a big part of why we structured this the way that we did. So I think it was really great for him, but also some of the other coaches that were able to be present at practice.
That was an interesting week, obviously, when that was happening. And Lincoln Riley, really impressive press conference he had on Friday. The first time, you know, the first one was pomp and circumstance and Rick Caruso and Carol Fulton and stuff. But this was just like local media, some TV. And, you know, that was one of the things he mentioned, how, I mean, there's going to be roster turnover. He needs to build a championship roster. But that week allowed him to kind of take a look at, you know, what he had on this team. And, unfortunately for some of the players, it was difficult, and maybe they weren't all going to put out their best foot because they were struggling with things at the time too. So, do you feel like that kind of maybe hurt some of the players, just because, you know, or is it understandable? Like, look, they were going through a really tough time, and there was so much uncertainty going on that maybe that wasn't the typical player that you would see on a week by week basis.
Yeah, I mean, it credits our players. It wasn't just uncertainty that week. It was uncertainty all season long. Yeah. I mean, it was obviously very early on in the year that there was a leadership change within the football program, and they competed. Obviously, the results were not what they wanted or what we wanted, but they competed. And even that last week, you know, the BYU game, the Cal game, I thought we competed as hard in those two games as we did all season long. And, you know, again, the results not being what we want them to be, I hope that people could still be proud of the effort in the face of really difficult circumstances.
Yeah, I do remember that, because I didn't think USC would cover either one of those games. They didn't cover Cal, but there was, I mean, kind of understandable the number of guys that were out. But both games, I thought they played as hard as any other ones, which was like, wow, this is there's a lot of adversity going on, and they actually did. They played both those games tough. I mean, almost beat BYU. So
we got a question on YouTube that said, what are the expectations for the team in Lincoln Riley's first season? How do expectations rise year by year?
Yeah, I don't know that we define it in those terms. It's still December. So we're focused right now on recruiting and building a roster and evaluating what we have and building a staff. I think there's a time and place for those conversations as far as what the expectations are or and will be. But you know, I think Lincoln has addressed pretty clearly that he thinks that we can really build a special team and a special roster, a special program, and compete for championships. And that's the goal. That's why we wake up every day.
Mm-hmm. A word that kept being mentioned by Lincoln Riley and has been in the past couple press conferences is facilities, and we've gotten a lot of questions about it. What can you speak to about the facilities that Lincoln keeps referring to?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me that's more of a reflection of the fact that we're going to look at every aspect of the program and want to be on a championship level. I don't know that I'm have anything specific to comment on with respect to facilities. We know how much the world has changed in 10 years in college football, especially with regard to facilities. I mean, that's another aspect of a program like support staff and recruiting operations and personnel that has really evolved. The graphic design and video elements that are such a fundamental part of how you promote the program and how you recruit. All of those things have evolved, and we want to be the best at every single thing that we do. So to me, that's just another dimension of it that we want to evaluate and be the best that we can be.
We got a question from Alan on Facebook who wanted to know, what are your hopes and expectations for the Pac-12 for your conference games, new media deals, future expansion, et cetera?
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time for our conference. George has been phenomenal. I'm a huge fan. Yeah. We got to spend some time with him on his campus visit. And if you follow him on social media, you see that he's very active and being at games, supporting the schools in the league. He's been very vocal and influential on key issues that are facing college athletics. And I think that's the type of leadership that the current circumstances in college athletics demand. And so we've been really excited to partner with him. He's been very engaging with us. And there are certainly well-documented opportunities for us with respect to our upcoming media rights deal, with respect to, you know, potential expansion of the college football playoff, and a number of other things that the conference is working on. So I think there was a big part of this that was talking about our growth potential as a program, not just here, the resources that we've invested, but here's what the future looks like.
Yeah.
And those are big components of it for sure.
I thought there was a lot of parallels between George Kliavkov, the new Pac-12 commissioner, and Mike Bone, and what you guys have done, where maybe previous leaders from those roles were kind of ivory tower people. They weren't really involved. They didn't really know what's going on. They didn't know how much a gallon of milk would cost, if you were saying something like that. They weren't out with the people. They've never got their tickets scanned and things like that. And George Kliavkov seems to be really involved in that, just going on these campus tours. I went to the Pac-12 championship game in Vegas, and he had mentioned, you know, unsolicited, about USC hiring Lincoln Riley, the uptick in recruiting. Like, Larry Scott would have never known something like that. But how important is that? It seems like that's something that you and Mike Bone have embraced. But it seems like George Kliavkov is too. I mean, how important is that for a conference commissioner?
Yeah, I give him a lot of credit. There's a lot of expertise that he brings to this role, based on a lifetime of really interesting and key leadership roles that he's held. But certainly there's the actual on-campus experience that we all have every day that maybe was a part of the job that he wasn't as familiar with. And So rather than try to create the impression that he kind of already understood it or knew it, he went around and visited every single school. And he met with the leadership. They did a kind of a level down meeting where they met with, you know, at each school, he met with just general staff members who are there on the ground level every single day supporting the student athletes. I thought that was a really cool thing that he did. I think that that's something that's really taxing on somebody to travel around with everything else that he had going on. I mean, at the time that he shows up, conference realignment kicks into gear and things are changing rapidly, and he still made time to go visit all the schools and be present on our campuses and get to know the people. And it would have been very easy for him to say, you know what, there's a lot going on, I'm going to call this off. But he got it all done, and he was everywhere. He was at some of our games this season. I've seen him multiple times. Really impressed with his level of dedication and commitment to really understanding what the challenges are that we face on our campuses, because that's a part of the job that until you're in it, until you really live what we live every single day, it's hard to really comprehend.
Now, I'm breaking this up with an off-topic question. Jackson on YouTube wanted to know, do you still miss Skyline Chili?
I do. My funny story with Skyline Chili is that I actually never ate it growing up. I would go to every Cincinnati Reds opening day with another family, and we would always stop at Skyline before first pitch, and I would never eat it because I didn't think it was any good. It did not look or seem appealing to me. I did not eat chili. I don't eat hot dogs to this day. And it wasn't until I interned for Mike in the University of Cincinnati one summer in the athletic department that my first week as an intern, he said, hey, we're going to Skyline. And I was like, great. I really don't want to go here, but I'm not about to tell my new boss when I'm a college student intern that we're going to go somewhere else. So
yeah.
I get in the car, we roll down to Skyline, and I ordered like a buffalo chicken wrap, just something generic that I could get off the menu. And he was like, no, what are you doing? You're getting you need to get a five-way and a this and a that. And I was like, oh man, like this is going to be bad. And so he made me get it. And for the first 21 years of my life, I had never experienced Skyline Chili, and I had it that day. And it was one of the greatest things I've ever had.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now I cannot get enough Skyline.
Wow.
If I get back to Cincinnati, it will not it will not be a trip that's free of Skyline, because I will make sure to get there. It's I wouldn't say I actively miss it per se, but if I'm back there, I'm gonna get some Skyline.
What is it, maybe like a bowl of chili, or is it on a hot dog usually? Or
I'm a three-way guy, okay, so. Well, back in the day, while I could still eat dairy, I should say I was a three-way guy.
What does that inability mean for the non-Skyliners?
Yeah, so that's a base of spaghetti with chili and cheese.
Oh, okay.
But wow. Now, because I can't eat the cheese, I do a chilito, which is a burrito that's got chili and spaghetti in it, and I put some of their like little special crackers in there.
Oh.
And it's the Brandon special. I can eat like 10 of those.
Wow. Nice. Look at that.
So Kaylee, you could do the cheese, not the crackers.
No. So yeah. I can't do the Brandon special, apparently.
Oh. Missing out.
Yeah, I know. Brandon, people also wanted to know, where did you get your sweatshirt? People are really loving the sweatshirt.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta credit our equipment room on that one. I actually, I don't really know what I did with it. And then I saw Dante wear it either to a press conference or at a game or something. I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. I need to find where I have that. So my closet, you know, I left Cincinnati with like two bags. And so my closet is pretty much Cardinal, gray, black, white. And so, you know, it's all Nike USC gear. I wear the same five things, I think, every day of the week. So this was in the weekend or the off period of time special, I guess.
Yeah. You're, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't know. There may be a way to get it. I will look into that and report back.
Nice.
Okay.
That's on the P.
I have. There was somebody who reached out to me on the Peristyle who wanted a hat. That we did not sell.
That USC hat, people ask about it all the time.
Yeah, so we're working on getting that in the bookstore. I think some supply chain issues have slowed it down, but the plan is first quarter 2022 that we'll have that in the bookstore.
Look at that.
Yeah. So I asked you, like, the press conference, sort of like sense of relief. Are you 30 yet? Are you almost 30?
Don't rush it.
Okay.
The gray hairs may make you think otherwise.
I mean, young, you know, you're a young person for the role that you're in, like, as far as the athletic department stuff goes. I mean, you're going to get offers, like Rick Caruso gave you an offer and stuff. Like, what's the, like, kind of the 5-year plan or whatever for Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, I never expected that I would get to be in a critical role for the sports team I grew up loving as a Cincinnati Bearcats fan. It still, to this day, is incomprehensible to me that I had a part in hiring Luke Fickell there and seeing the success that he's had, and so happy for my city and that program to be in the college football playoff.
Yeah.
Just would have never imagined that that would ever be possible for the University of Cincinnati. And so to see it happen has been really moving and meaningful for me, and very excited to go cheer them on in Dallas against Alabama. But, you know, I never thought I would be at the Cleveland Browns working in the front office and getting to work for some amazing people like John Dorsey and Sashi Brown and Andrew Berry and Chris Cooper and Paul DePodesta. Like, I never fathomed that that would be where my career would take me. And certainly when I went back to the University of Cincinnati, I didn't think 10 months later I'd be sitting in Mike's office and he'd get a call about the USC athletic director position. So I stopped playing that game, trying to guess where I'm going to be 5 years from now. But this is obviously an extremely exciting time to be here and to be a part of what we're building. And there's a job that we started 2 years ago that we have to see through.
All right.
Is 2 years the longest you've been at a place professionally?
You don't need to embarrass me on a live show.
I'm just wondering.
There's going to be some.
Well, he's that young. So, he's been a lot. You know?
There's going to be some poster on the peristyle that's going to slap me down for being a typical millennial. But yes, this is 2 years is the longest that I've made it in a role so far.
The curious thing is, obviously, it was the 2 years you were doing a lot of work. There's a lot of behind the scenes work. People are very critical outwardly, and all of a sudden now it turns to praise, which is great. But sometimes it's like that challenge. Does that drive you, or it's like no one's believing it? Like no one's believing what's going on. Now it's like, okay, if Lincoln Riley wins a championship or something, it's like, okay, everyone just expected that. Like, is it going to be as satisfying as it was to, like, here's the big reveal, Lincoln Riley's head coach, you know?
Yeah, I think I pay attention to that stuff more than I probably should in terms of how it motivates me. Not proud of it, but
that's human nature.
Yeah, right? I mean, it does. Like, again, being a professional and a competitor, the reason I even went to Penn to begin with is because my brother told me he didn't think I could get into an Ivy League school. So I haven't, maybe my decision making skills have improved since then. But it's not about me. It's about this university and this program, and you dedicate your life to something. I mean, this has been my life for a few years. I mean, the last 2 years have been extremely hard. And so to me, it's just, I want to be on that podium someday. That's why I'm in it. That's why I do what I do. That's why I love sports. And I don't care what the circumstances are, right? I hope that, you know, we can get there, and I'm going to do my part to try to make that happen the best that I can. And not about me, but, you know, I credit Mike a lot for his leadership. You know, I have always been kind of more to the side and behind the scenes in the work that I do. But it's hard to watch somebody that you really care about, who's given you every opportunity in your life, get treated the way that he was treated by a lot of different people. So if there's anybody I'm excited for and happy for who's deserving of it, it's Mike.
Nice.
In that sense, we got a lot of questions. Did you see the apology threads that were started on the Parasol to both you and Mike?
I did see the apology threads. We had a few laughs at that and moved on to whatever the pressing thing was that was confronting us at that moment. But we certainly have felt the apologies for sure.
We got a question from Randy on YouTube who said, with fan interest higher than it's been for a long while, what will immediate access to the football program look like going forward?
Yeah, not a conversation that we've had. You know, being media friendly is a cornerstone of how USC has been. We take a lot of pride in that. And Tim, in his retirement after 43 years, I mean, he set the standard of what that's supposed to look like. So not conversations that we've had. I mean, again, we're very, very focused on what we need to accomplish today. But I'm sure there'll be a time and place for that. But being media friendly and just the way that we approach it in terms of the relationships and the accessibility, those things aren't going to change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mike said that if you guys missed it, you know, he talked about that during the press conference about that they're still dedicated to doing that. So just the fact that, you know, Brandon's here kind of shows you.
Yeah. Pretty much.
The media friendliness.
Now, over the 2 years, Brandon, this is such a cheesy question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Biggest learning lesson the last 2 years?
Biggest learning lesson the last 2 years. Wow, that's a. I'm not sure that I have a great answer for. I don't think I have something like super profound.
Oh, did I
to be able to say that I've learned in particular? I think it's just been a great reinforcement and reminder that you win with people, and we try to make things complicated, but you get great people who are committed to the same things, who are selflessly committed to achieving the goals that you have set out for you. And that's when things happen. And we've been able to get a lot of the right people in place to be able to create some of the things that we've created. So I always say that, you know, so often in life we chase jobs or titles or places we want to work or things that we want to do. But in reality, what we should do is we should chase people, because it's people who are going to invest in our development. It's people who are going to be committed to our success. It's people who, when that opportunity presents itself, they're going to stand on the table and advocate for us. And that's been kind of the enduring lesson of my career so far. But I think this entirety of the last 2 years has just been a great reminder that you are the people that you are. I mean, that is it at the end of the day.
As you mentioned at the top of the show, I think there's a misconception that your job is basically football and men's basketball, and that's kind of it. What else about your job do you want USC fans to know about, or an aspect that you have your hands in?
Yeah, so my role, I would say, is multidimensional. As Mike's chief of staff, I help him sort of run the day-to-day of the athletic department broadly overall. I also oversee all of our external team, which is you know, marketing and ticket sales and social media and video and graphic design and communications and sponsorships. And then obviously I have my role supervising the football team as the administrator. So definitely have, you know, I do a lot of liaising as well to different partners on campus. We believe in a very integrated model with our athletics program. And so being available and being a great partner to various units on campus, from the president's office to our office of general counsel to office of government relations, we've spent a lot of time with through pandemic lobbying and name, image, likeness, and all the things that are happening at the state and federal levels that impact college athletics. So, you know, those are sort of like the kind of the key pillars of my role. But, you know, Mike also bestowed upon me the great fortune of being our COVID-19 action chair for the last 2 year and a half or whatever it's been. So, I mean, thinking back to that period of time, we're literally – there was a meeting that we called and it had 20 people on it. And we came up with a list of like 30 things that we needed to create from scratch, right? From, all right, if an athlete's going to return to campus after the kind of COVID shutdown, like what do they need to do, right? What are the steps that they need to clear to? How do they check into the building every single day? And I mean, on and on and on, where does the signage go? And so obviously we had an amazing team supporting us who poured their life into it. But that was definitely a unique part of the role, becoming an amateur epidemiologist. Our general counsel's office also told me that I'm on my way to my JD. So
Nice.
I'll take it.
You can go
I just asked if I could get it. Would it be accredited by USC? Because that would be pretty nice.
You go to school, you know, go to law school at USC for free, I think. So you go, you know.
I got a lot of time.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like one of the interesting stories that came out of that press conference, the initial one that was like just so well done, you know, the 1923 club and the, you know, Hollywood sign in the background, all that kind of stuff, was that you did make a call to Lincoln Riley, but years before. And the funny part was like, yeah, he didn't return our call. I think it was right before he ended up getting the Oklahoma job, right? So kind of satisfying that he returned the call this time. Or
yeah, Keely asked me that, I think, the day of the press conference.
I did. That was my follow-up, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't really prepared for that question because I hadn't really thought about it at all. The fact that, you know, that didn't come together at Cincinnati was not a surprise. It was very early on in our process as we were trying to figure out maybe who was interested. Because, you know, your process at Cincinnati is a little bit different than your process at USC in terms of what types of candidates you're after and kind of what your positioning is relative to the candidate marketplace. And, you know, he was a couple months away, I think, from being the new head coach at Oklahoma at the time. So it made all the sense in the world why he didn't pick up that call. But, you know, we discovered, I shouldn't say we discovered him, but he became known to us when he was the offensive coordinator at East Carolina, because there was a game we played against them in 2014 that I think we beat them at Cincinnati. We 52-44 or something wild. And,
They could score that
offense is really, really good. What is going on there? And that's kind of how we learned about him and have followed him ever since.
We're not talking about like, oh, could have hired this guy, blah, like that kind of stuff. There was obviously, you mentioned Luke Fickell before because you guys had hired him there. His name has come up for a lot of jobs, not just the USC one. Are you kind of surprised he's still head coach at Cincinnati, or do you think he's going to stick there a long time? What are your thoughts on his kind of future there, since you were involved in that hiring?
Well, as a fan, I'm really happy that he's the head coach at Cincinnati. I mean, I love that, but it wouldn't really be appropriate for me to speculate on kind of where he is or where he's at. But I have an enormous amount of respect for him and what he's accomplished, and just grateful that as when I put my fan hat on, that he's the man in charge of the program that I love.
Can you do that? Like, is that easy for you? Because I started this website, you know, I was a big USC fan, but then it becomes your job, and now it's a different thing. I grew up like a Steelers fan. I don't even find myself because I grew up in the Pittsburgh.
can we fit in the camera if we spread apart?
I still like my Steelers, but I feel like I'm less of a fan of sports now because it's your job. Like, can you still, and maybe, you know, because you're younger and you can do it, but you can still be like a passionate Cincinnati fan.
It's not the same. And honestly, that's like a grave disappointment to me, because being a fan was so fundamental to my identity. I mean, I structured my life around going to games. My senior year of high school, or my junior year of high school, the Reds made the playoffs for really the first time in my life. I think I went to 61 out of 81 home games that year.
Wow.
And so it has always been just a core part of who I am, and I haven't been able to recapture it. And honestly, being a Bengals fan that went to work for the Browns was like an identity crisis that's really hard to conceptualize. Yeah. And I don't know that I'll ever be able to get back to sort of that raging level of passion where I'm throwing temper tantrums when we lose, right? I would be lying if I didn't say that is probably the most heartbreaking part of working in sports, is that magic that you feel as a fan sort of escapes you. And I miss that. I mean, I truly do.
Yeah, it's tough. And sorry, probably people can't relate to that, but I just wanted to say, because it's just something we have to deal with when you work in sports. It's like you can't be as passionate as you were.
But in that same vein, Alan on Facebook wanted to know, who will Brandon support next year when Cincinnati and USC meet in the national championship game?
Fight on, man. I'm insulted by the question.
Yeah. We also, speaking of your fandom, had a question if Pete Rose should make it to the Hall of Fame.
I don't know if I should be taking such controversial stances.
I don't know. You're a bona fide Reds fan, so I was just curious, you know.
I think his production on the field as a player certainly warrants being in the Hall of Fame. I think it's up to others to decide how the rest of it should be contemplated.
Yeah. I guess the good thing for you is you working for USC, that passion could be there for the school that you work for, right? You can be, if you're in your box or whatever, like, damn, I did get that first down. Like, I guess that's still part of it, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Just depends who's around and who's watching.
Okay. Yeah, fair. We talked about it a little bit, but I know you can't go into specifics, but how was it like for you and Mike kind of balancing the coaching search with a football season going on and everything else that you guys have to do as far as the athletic department?
It was really unconventional. I mean, to do something in 2.5 months that you normally have 7 to 10 days to do, it was definitely unique. I do think it afforded us an opportunity to run a really thorough, comprehensive, detailed process. And I think all of those things contribute to getting to the outcome that you want, because you're able to execute your process in the best way that you possibly can. And you don't have to concede on anything that you feel like is really important in your process. So I think that was a benefit at the end of the day. I don't know that, you know, you make a decision on the basis of that individually or independently. But it was definitely different. But, you know, you've got the things that are fundamental to your job that you have to do every single day, regardless of who the coach is. And so those things continued. And at the same time, we were able to really do some of the things that we felt were really important as far as how we positioned ourselves to sort of the college football influencer marketplace.
Mm-hmm. In that sense, what was the biggest challenge of the whole process?
I guess what I would say is just staying disciplined to the process. Because, you know, there's conversation about it every single day and you're getting questions, and it would be very easy to just be consumed with just the notion of being in a process, just thinking about it and living every single detail of it. When in reality, there were just some days where there wasn't anything to do in the process, right? It's just you had 2.5 months. So I think just allocating the appropriate amount of time and resource to the process while not giving up anything that you need to do every single day was probably the biggest challenge.
That makes sense.
Well, we're at the top of the hour. We didn't want to keep them too long.
Yeah. Can I get some rapid fire questions in?
Yeah, go for it.
So we got some questions about adding additional sports to USC's program. Is that something that you foresee in the future?
Not something that we've actively discussed, no. That's how I'm supposed to do rapid fire questions. Right?
I'm just so not used to it. Yeah. You're sitting in that seat, so you need to go for like 20 more minutes.
No, it's funny. I remember asking like Pat Hayden about it a long time ago. Like, women's softball comes up a lot, and it was just like, you know, there's a lot of monetary issues that deal with something like that. I mean, is that stuff you can explore though, like at some point?
Yeah, those are really complex issues, right? I mean, you're talking facilities and operational impacts, and certainly scholarship allocation and Title IX resources, budget, right? So especially if you're talking about a sport that really can't sustain itself from a revenue standpoint, those are things that can sometimes take years to study as far as how that would work. Like I said, not anything that we've discussed to this point.
I know you've already done this a little bit, but Brennan wanted to know, what is the plan, if any, on integrating Reggie Bush back into USC?
Well, you know, I think that it was that first day in June that his dissociation ended that we brought him back. And we love Reggie, and we want Reggie to be as involved in the program as Reggie wants to be. And it's amazing to me that there are recruits that talk about Reggie who were barely alive to see him play and still the impact that he's made on them. So we love Reggie, and very excited that we were able to bring him back to being part of this family again.
Yeah.
He deserved that. And also really fun to watch him, you know, with Matt representing USC every Saturday on Big Noon Kickoff.
I get a lot of questions on like radio shows, and like, yeah, about recruiting. Like, you know, people don't remember Reggie Bush. And I'm like, I mean, we still talk to recruits of this day that talk about him, and they want to wear number 5 in high school. And it's, I don't know how, like, they weren't born or they were a couple years old, and
YouTube
is like a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
They still follow him.
And speaking of recruiting, we got a lot of questions about what do you think the Lincoln Riley hire will do for recruiting, not just for USC, for the state of California and the talent that's within it.
Certainly, we know the incredible talent that comes out of the state of California, and we want to be able to retain as much of that talent as we possibly can. And I think Lincoln talked in great depth about that on Friday as far as how he envisions being able to do that. I think the response has certainly been indicative of a community that is ready to do that. I thought he said it really well, which was something to the effect that a lot of these kids growing up in Southern California are looking for a reason to come to USC.
Yeah.
And Lincoln's certainly a great reason to come to USC. And there are a lot more reasons beyond that, but that certainly helps.
And it's funny. You don't even need that big of a reason. That's a huge reason to stay. And so, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot more of these kids staying home. Just, you know, similar to what Pete Carroll did when he got hired on. He made it cool to stay in California. I think Lincoln Riley can make it cool to stay home. And I think it helps the other Pac-12 programs too, because there will be more kids that are willing to stay in the Pac-12 footprint as opposed to going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in 2021 with that class, we had 9 of the top 20 recruits from the state of California that elected to stay home and come to USC. And so I think that was the start of hopefully what will be a great trend. I think that was the most since 2004 last year. So all positive for us.
Now, you answered the controversial question about Pete Rose. I have another one for you.
Oh.
Alternate uniforms. What are your thoughts on that for USC's football team?
I saw that pop up.
Yeah.
Not something that we've discussed either. I understand the history and the tradition. You know, I by nature tend to be more entrepreneurial and innovative in the way that I look at things. But whether it's the FCS opponents or anything else, I mean, we're going to be respectful of history and tradition. And, you know, certainly some of those things will come up and maybe there are creative ways to look at it. But I don't know that I'm ready to declare anything on that. And I don't think that's something that is my decision anyway. But I understand that can be an interesting topic for people. And, you know, I think there are merits to both sides of the argument.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the FCS thing, and I think that was one we broke with Mike, right? Mike,
he came on our podcast,
The podcast, and he said that they weren't going to play. You guys weren't going to play UC Davis, ended up playing San Jose State this year. You got your grand slam out of the way. Like, obviously, the Lincoln Riley thing, this was this is what fans wanted. They wanted a big coaching hire. But before that, you were setting the foundation, you know, trying to fix a lot of things in the athletic department. The analogy was it was hitting a lot of singles and stuff. Did you have a favorite single along the way that maybe got a lot of fanfare? People love the FCS thing, but is there one of those, you know, smaller wins for the athletic department that you kind of like?
Do you like us quantifying it by singles for all the work you do?
Maybe you hate that too.
I'm very familiar with the metaphor. Don't have a particular single and wouldn't know exactly what your definition of it is either in terms of some of the things that we've done. But I think broadly speaking, we're very proud of a lot of things that have happened in the last 2 years. And again, that's a reflection on Dr. Fultz's support and Mike's leadership and the commitment that's been made by so many people that are anonymous to the peristyle and to fans and to people on social media who are there every single day working in support of our student athletes in very, very critical areas that make the student athlete experience possible. And so I'm happy for us as a collective that we've been able to enjoy some of those, what you would call singles and doubles.
Doubles. There are doubles too. I got a good work out,
Triples seem to be a little bit neglected in this scenario. Yeah,
they're rare. Triples are rare.
That's true. In that sense, Brandon, what should USC fans expect going forward? It seems like there's a lot of momentum in the program with football, men's basketball, women's basketball with Lindsey Gottlieb. What should they expect going forward?
Yeah, to me, what that is we want to be the best at every single thing that we do. And Lindsey is phenomenal. You know, I would love to see more support for our women's basketball team as she's building the program that she's going to build. Obviously, we talked about Andy and the work that he's done in men's basketball and what we know Lincoln is going to do in football and the way that we're going to support that and the way that the community is going to rally around that. But really up and down the athletics program, you know, we have the capacity to compete for national championships in everything that we do. And that's something that's important to all of us. We talk about our vision to be the most student athlete centered program in the country, and that means a lot of things. and we take pride in our pursuit of that mission. But winning is a part of that, and so we want to win in everything that we do.
Mm-hmm. Fat Bank brings up a good point. Ryan, we didn't get a food analogy from you.
Well, actually, I thought you had one.
I mean, I had one ready in the event that it made sense, but I shouldn't just invent a food analogy
but
on this.
That's spot. That's how it works, Brandon. You make it up. That's the Ryan way. You don't have to, but Ryan.
If you had one you want to share, we could go with it.
I'm a rookie food analogy maker, so okay. I was just saving it for the right time.
Yeah, we won't put him on the spot. It's okay. Any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we wrap this one up? Brandon, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a pleasure talking with you, and so glad that our viewers could see it as well.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. We're lucky to have you here on the show. And I think if you're a USC fan, hopefully you guys get the impression of what Brandon and Mike have been able to do at the athletic department and feel that you guys are lucky to have them, you know, representing you and the athletic department. If you have any questions that they care very deeply about these programs winning, hopefully that he's answered those for you today. So, I mean, not going to make every right decision and stuff, but just seeing what they've been able to do, obviously, they have things going in the right direction. And they're treating USC football and the USC Athletic Department like I think it needs to be treated, and I think the fans really want it to. So hopefully you guys all feel how lucky you are to have these guys out here. And we're lucky that you guys would come on. So thanks for coming on, Brandon.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. Brandon. Thank you for having me.
Alrighty, that's going to wrap it up. Boss Man, we are going on holiday break, correct?
Holiday break. I'm going to Boston for a week. So we'll come back after... I don't know, maybe before the new year or just after the new year and do some shows. We'll keep doing podcasts and stuff, but probably not the live show until after the new year.
I think. Robert on Facebook really wanted me to tell you happy early birthday since your birthday is coming up, Mr. Boss.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Another year.
December 29?
I'll be 51. 51. On Wednesday.
Look at that. So, yes, look at that.
I tried. I set you up for it.
Thank you. Yeah.
He embraces it. Alrighty, that's gonna wrap it up. That's Brandon, that's Ryan, I'm Keely. We'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.